This is 1360 AM.
WNJC. Washington Township. Philadelphia. Philadelphia's Renaissance Radio Station. Brought to you from Forsyth Broadcasting. Or listen to us at WNJCRadio.com.
This is your host, Will Hemingway, and you are listening to Practice Preparedness on the radio. And today we are going to cover the topic of crisis preparedness in light of what is going on around us right now. As you know, or maybe you don't know if you live in a cave or you've taken up in a silly bunker, which we always generally refer to as a prepaid crypt. There's lots of things going on. Over the past few days, there have been lots of activity in the background in the intel side that is leading a lot of people to be very concerned about a real credible threat on the U.S. homeland in a large city or maybe a couple of large cities simultaneously. And it was given between Christmas and New Year's, but any idiot can figure that if you want the most impact, it's going to be New Year's Eve. So my opinion is stay home with your friends, have a nice party with your friends at one of their houses so you don't get a DUI ticket if you're going to be drinking, and have some fun and stay where you're not going to be overrun or something worse. Lots of things going on. In my sit reps to the people who belong to my newsletter, they've been seeing a lot over the past week, lots and lots of things coming across the wire, including more and more thefts of propane tanks. There were two last, it was on the 24th and the 16th of this month out of Philadelphia. One has been classified as industrial theft, but the other ones are an unknown. They were very brazen. They did it under lots of video surveillance and got away without getting caught. There were hundreds and hundreds of Coleman portable, like you'd use for a Coleman stove, the little gas tanks. And there have been several articles, including in the Al-Qaeda Inspire magazine, which is an online magazine by them, with detailed instructions on how to tape four of them together with a remote detonator made out of a throwaway cell phone that they put inside of a backpack. Again, going back to the same old game as we had in Boston and lots of other places, including the ones that went off in Paris. They had the bombs in the backpacks. So this is why you don't want to leave one of your packages sitting around. Someone might blow it up trying to find out if it's a bomb. But more importantly is you want to be extremely situationally aware to make sure that if you are working in the city, that you are paying a lot of attention to what's going on around you at all times. If you see somebody acting hanky, get somebody's attention who's authority, remove yourself. Remember, you cannot be everyone's protector. It's just not going to work that way. They're going to look at you like you're a kook. By the time you get done arguing, if it really is going to be something, it's going to be too late to save yourself from it. I've had quite a number of really in-depth conversations and gone back to refresh my own knowledge recently with some people who just came back from training and have been trained in chemical biological attack preparedness and how to handle it as first responders. One of the things that people don't know is those supposed WMDs that never showed up in Iraq, but actually did, if you read the New York Times article that came out a few months ago, but kind of did, but kind of didn't. There were only 22,000 of them, but, you know, they don't count. They also cycled around in Syria, and from what a lot of the intel that's been coming across the table in the last week is that Turkey provided ISIS with sarin gas canisters this week. And in fact, they actually arrested one of their people who are in their parliament there, who's a Kurd, who spoke out about it because he thought it was immoral, and they locked him up because he called attention to it. To me, when that happens, that increases the likelihood that you're probably hearing the truth. And if that's the case, then the next question we have to have is, how far can they reach out with that? Most people do not know what sarin gas is. They're not aware. Sarin gas is a very powerful nerve agent. There are a few antidotes, but using the term antidote for that is really a misnomer, because having gone today to refresh my information base into some of the U.S. military base information on the subject, they all basically tell you that most military personnel that have been in the CBRN, the chemical, biological, radiological side, will tell you that they believe that taking an atropine shot only keeps you alive long enough to go take another shot and then maybe go back to fight for a few hours before you die anyway, because you need immediate medical attention. And if you look at, there's not a word of it here, but in the news abroad, in The Guardian, in BBC, on RT, on Russia Today, it's been all over the place on their newscasts over the past 5-6 days. In Belgium, they clipped someone today, a pair of them today. They had no direct connection to sarin, but they had paperwork that indicated their interest to use that. And if that's the case, then you need to know what it's about. And what that means is that the only real way you're going to survive a sarin gas attack is to get away from it before you get it. It is inhaled. It can also be put in the water to contaminate water supplies. This is a big, big threat. It's a chemical weapon that known as a nerve agent. And basically what it does is, if you get a lethal dose, inhale a lethal dose, what you end up with is, it's actually an organophosphorus compound. And what it does is, you die from suffocation by lung muscle paralysis. This is why people who have gotten it, and we've seen pictures of it really being used by Assad, the president in Syria, who used it on the Kurds a few years back, and there was lots of news reels of it. Sad. People foam, white foam from their mouths, and they basically expire within 10 minutes. The problem is that if you only get a minor dose, if you don't get immediate attention, you too will not make it. And it's really a combination of 4 or 5 drugs that they treat you with that you need in order to have any chance of survival. So forget running out, those of you who are preppers, forget the idea of running out to your doctor and asking for a couple of atropine shots. And by the way, an EpiPen will not work. It's completely different. The epinephrine is used for speeding. It speeds your heart. If you use that and you don't need it, you're probably going to cause yourself to have a cardiac arrest. So these are the reasons that it goes back, and you'll hear this a lot from me, because as a risk manager and as a specialist in the area in physical security, I can tell you nothing trumps proactive behavior. If you act ahead of time, if you are situationally aware, you will be able to thwart most of these things before it happens. They're making a big deal right now about the neighbors in San Bernardino to Saeed Farouk and his wife, because, and it's amazing to me, because a few weeks ago, If someone had come forward and said to the news media or gone to the FBI and said, oh, I think my neighbor is doing something really strange and there may be a terrorist, they would have been basically attacked for being racist or Islamophobic or whatever. Now, on the news media, I watched two reports in the last 2 days where they named the neighbors by name and where they lived and said how if they had only acted, then they could have stopped it. Well, I'm sorry, you can't have it both ways. Yeah. Yeah. So the problem is, as the FBI has said, they don't go out and kick the door down on every person they get a phone call on. But if they look and they see something that's questionable, they'll sit on them. Unfortunately, it's very much like retail theft loss prevention. Anyone who's ever worked in that field knows that if every person that walks in the door into a retail location has the potential to steal. But what do? You're not going to go up and pat them down. You can't get in their brain. What was that Minority Report? Wasn't it Minority Report, the one where they were putting them in jail ahead of time before they did it? Yeah. So, you know, I mean, we can't do that. So then the question becomes, what can you do? So you have to split it down the middle. You listen, you watch, you check them out, you look at their activities. We now know because of what happened in San Bernardino that they were not even looking at their social media activity in public, not private posting, but public postings on Facebook and Twitter, and they did not even look at them. They were out there for anybody to look at, and they didn't look because they said that they had been advised that it would upset people because they would react negatively because they were invading their privacy. So this is where we get into this problem of the political correctness. Of course, we all want, and any good survivalist certainly is going to likely fall into the category of being extremely sternly set on the idea of privacy and freedoms. The flip side is there is a point where you have to be able to balance what it takes and what it doesn't. As an investigator for over 30 years, my take is I don't need someone to take 330 million people's rights away in order for me to catch 200 or 2,000 people or even 100,000 people. Then I need to figure out what it takes to get them without taking away those other people's rights. The problem is most knee-jerk reactions from politicians who really have no idea how real law enforcement works, because there's not necessarily a lot of that out there, unfortunately, because the system is so broken. They think that the way you fix that is to allow them to invade your privacy whenever they want. And as you see, even with the Patriot Act, though some of the things have really helped, the fact of the matter is it really hasn't helped that much, because in the end, nobody's looking. And the problem when you're culling the kind of data that passes through the place like the NSA or the FBI nowadays, you do not have the manpower. In the private industry sector, if we put a security guard, even a $30 an hour security guard, which I've done, in a place like New York University, watching the 100 screens of all the cameras in the all-female dorm in downtown Manhattan that had 15 to 20 rapes a week, and tell them, you watch these screens, and anything that happens, you alert one of the roaming guys who are actually licensed police officers in the city, but work as NYU Police Department, and dispatch them there where they can react. And yet still people got by all the time. No human being can spend that much time and pay that much attention. We actually put on five people to cover those 100 screens by rotating them every hour so they didn't start drooling because they would lose focus and completely shut down and not get anything. So when you hear people like Michael Moore and these other imbeciles who are out there saying, oh, well, they don't this and they don't that. See, they wanted this to happen. Malarkey. If you have a video system on your house or on your business and there are eight cameras, I would put it down to you now. If you sit in front of that monitor and watch those eight cameras, and see how long it goes before you start doing anything else, playing solitaire, staring at the wall, playing with your phone, whatever. It's never, ever going to happen. You're never going to be able to do it. All that is a tool for you to go back to afterward, so that that way, if something does happen, you can go back after it again, becoming reactive. So let's talk about it. Now that we've covered a little idea of some points on the threat matrix side, and if you don't know what a threat matrix is, go to survivalrisks.com. It's off of the practicepreparedness.com site. There's a link up top on a button to take you to all of our sites. Go to the survivalrisks.com website, and you'll see a risk matrix there, and you can read all about it. Meanwhile, let's talk about what you do. So what happens if it's just a civil unrest? We've seen it recently. It's happened a lot. It's happened in Chicago, happened in Baltimore. They shut everything down. You saw it on the news where they whined about the plight of the people or the one person and then their grievances, some true, some not. But think about all of the other people there who had nothing to do with it, like Ferguson. They burned down stores of mom and pop stores, places that offered local residents food and supplies for their day-to-day living, and suddenly they couldn't even go out of the house because they didn't know if they were going to get jumped in the street or end up in the middle of some mob scene. These things are a big threat, even without a terror threat issue. So you can't just paint it in one corner and say, well, that's not going to happen, so I don't care, and that's all good. What you need to recognize is that if you have the skills to survive, they apply to everything. And in a real survival situation, it goes to preparedness. And that's where we start with mindset. So if you're listening and if you want to follow along, you can go to the practicepreparedness.com site, click on the button on the front page to go to show notes, and then click on today's date, which is the top button. And you'll come in and you'll see that I have a whole pile of buttons there that will take you to appropriate sections on my website and then point outwards from there that you can follow along with. So the first thing in survival is about creating a survival mindset. And that begins with building some basic critical research skills. So you need to be able to know how to listen to someone like me. Like I used to tell everyone with my old show, don't take my word for it. I go through a lot of trouble, and I do this every day for my clients. But don't take my word for it. I'm going to spark. I am going to tickle your little gray cells, as Poirot would say, and make you think and bring things to your attention you may have never, ever heard before. Or maybe you have. Maybe you haven't heard it in that direction. Go look it up. But as I have on this article on the site under critical research skills, I have two pictures there that help you get a feel for what perspective is about. When you start looking at that, you get the feel for how merely turning your head alters the entire meaning of what you see. And this is what you need to get to know when you're looking at and intaking information, so that when you cull different sources for information, that when you get to the end, you can say, gee, they didn't say this, they said that, they didn't say about this. Now I'm starting to get a clearer picture because I didn't listen to one side. And this is why you have to come to the point where you don't just surround yourself with people who yes you or that totally agree with you on everything, because they will never spark critical thinking. And we don't teach critical thinking skills anymore. It's unfortunate in schools pretty much. I mean, Eddie, you're in college, right? So you're in college right now. Do they ever talk to you about critical thinking skills?
they don't stress it as much as they should. Mm-hmm. They're more by the book, you know, it's all there for
here
you.
Here it is, wrote. So yeah. Basically wrote.
Yeah.
Wrote.
I mean, the only really times I could really think of where critical thinking is in use is probably when writing essays for English class.
Okay.
I mean, there was a lot of that. I did a hybrid advanced English, and you had to always take a stance on something and give your opinion. I just wrote a 12-page research paper.
Wow. Now, did they explain to you what it means and how to go about that, how to validate, how to vet facts?
No. They just sort of just, yeah.
They said, do you use critical thinking
skills?
Right.
And then yeah. And then once someone asked, they were like, well, it's college. You know, you've been over this before. So it was like, okay, well, guess we'll just wing this one, guys, you know?
Wow, that's really scary. Yeah. If you go to this page, thanks, Eddie. So if you go to this page, you're going to see, and this is certainly not a compendium, but it's a start. It's a pretty tightly written article. I've rewritten it several times. Give you some perspectives about some different thought processes that make you think about it. So when you get there, once you get there, then the next thing you need to take into consideration, and this is one that I get a lot of pushback from people on who are preppers and survivalists, and that is that we'll say some of them have a vein in them that waxes a little nostalgic to the idea of anarchy. And trust me when I tell you, I know probably 100,000 people that I've had contact with in my life. And of them, there's probably 4 who I'd put my money on surviving more than a week in a world that did not have a government, that had no structure, that had no oversight, had no law enforcement, no rules.
Wow.
Because most people see this, and he hit me if he heard me, but he's in Florida, so I can get away with it. So my oldest son, he lives in Florida. He's a very bright young man. He's 25 years old.
Wow.
And he's been through the mill. He's gone out with me on investigations as a kid. And he has this basic take that he wants to live alone out in the wilderness.
So he's been around you too much. Jeez.
So he's purchased a good-sized piece of property in a place where the zip code is EIEIO in southwestern Florida.
Wow.
And he believes this is the panacea for him. This is the euphemistic world that he's waited and survived his whole life to get to.
Really?
And granted, he grew up in a house that was probably 1,100 square feet with a stepfather, his mother, his brother, and himself in 1,100 square foot home. So privacy is at a premium in that world. So with that, he knows that he uses the hate word a lot. He hates having to be around people. He hates having to deal with people.
Really?
He hates being social because to him, the only social he knew was that environment.
Yeah.
And I've attempted to reason with him to explain to him that outside of that, there's a whole nother world that's not quite so horrible.
Right.
And at some point, probably a day or two in, he'd probably be going, oh my God, I hear crickets.
Yeah, yeah.
What the heck? I need something.
Right.
I'm losing my mind.
Socialism.
This is, you know, I'm going to lose my mind. I need to be socialized. I need to hear a human voice. I'd even welcome having my brother who tortures me all day long and have to get in fist fights with him, whatever, because at least it would be something. This is reality.
Right.
And the problem that people don't realize is the people who would be left after what preppers so waxed towards this whole RAWL, W-R-O-L, without rule of law, would mean that the only people who would have rules would be people like gangs and things like that, who you don't want them being in charge. So no matter how badly you think it sucks that your government is currently corrupt or whatever you want to call them, the fact of the matter is, in the end, it beats the heck out of the alternative. That's why you can push back. And at least in our society, you pretty much won't end up with a situation where after you speak out against them, in the middle of the night, they're going to send a bunch of guys in a black car to pick you up and take you away, torture you, and kill you, like happens in lots of other countries around the world. So we're pretty good there. The problem is, it's been so long here without any kind of a conflict on American soil that people have grown really soft, and they have a very unrealistic expectation of what life is about. So with that, it's critical that you understand that anyone left in a structure of government is probably going to be something that you're going to want to hang on to.
Yeah.
Because with them, they're going to need you as much as you're going to need them. And the general corrupt BS that we put up with every day with them will no longer really matter when everybody's worried about eating, having water, and not dying tomorrow.
Yeah.
So there's another button, next one down on the page on the site, on Practice Preparedness site, for today's show, and that is entitled Counterproductive Attitudes. So remember, you know, right now we see lots of people, they're out, they've been all these pickets recently, and there are some bad people who are like calling for people to kill police officers and this and that. Remember, they may be the only thing between you and them.
Right.
Because living in a state like New Jersey, where you can't carry, where you can't this and you can't that, and they make you jump through all these hoops to have your own gun, it's going to basically be at home. So if you're not at home, you're kind of SOL on that deal.
Right.
So you're going to need somebody who's going to be able to protect you at least long enough to get back to some safe haven. Mm-hmm. So remember, be nice to them, and maybe they'll be nice to you.
Yeah.
It's a give and take, and the ones who don't, well, we're not in a bad situation, they get weeded out.
Right.
But in the end, it's critical to remember that having a negative attitude is going to negatively impact you and your entire community, who you're going to really need.
Right.
The next button that I have in there to cover on is on the topic of, which is one of my pet things. Lots of preppers and lots of survivalists talk about bugging out.
Okay.
So here's the deal. If you think that if something happened on New Year's Eve and it broke out and all hell broke loose and we went into some real disaster and there was a war broke out or whatever on home soil, if you think you are going to run away to the mountains or run away to, say, Wharton State Forest, you're going to find a couple things. There's not enough deer there, even with the massive overpopulation, to last more than a week, because every person, especially all of my friends, the rednecks down in there that I go wheeling with all the time, who have bows and guns, who are going to be out there eating big time on every deer that's out there, because there will no longer be a bag limit and you won't have a hunting season.
Right.
It'll be called living. And that'll all go away really fast. Squirrels don't procreate fast enough all year long to do that. There's not enough rabbit around unless you're raising it yourself. So you're going to have a really, really bad day.
Yes.
If you don't have another place to go that's in a place that's going to have some infrastructure that stays up, that's going to have your supplies in it, and I'm talking not canned food, I'm talking freeze-dried food that lasts 25 years that won't go bad while it's sitting there while you're living life and you forget about it, then you're going to be in trouble. But the other part of it is that you need to understand that if you're going to go somewhere else, if you don't belong there, imagine if you've read any of these articles of the reactions, how people welcomed in refugees in Europe, and now they're backlashing and totally flipped over their approach, and they're rioting and they're attacking the so-called refugees, and even the innocents who don't deserve to be attacked are getting pulled into it, because there are so many of these people who've basically abused. They're defecating on their lawns, they're breaking into their cars and stealing things and all that. So what happens is, imagine if you, say, ran to West Virginia and you went up in the mountains. It's a completely different culture. You're a city folk to them. They hate city folk already. And then you're going to come and try to take their stuff. Imagine the mentality. Have you ever heard, I don't know, Eddie, have you ever seen, while I'm doing this, have you ever seen the Let me see if I can pull it up real quick.
Okay.
The story, it's a children's story, The Ant and the Grasshopper.
Oh, yeah, I remember reading that a while ago.
I don't know if anybody out there, excuse me, knows the story, but essentially the break of the story was that in a field one summer's day, a grasshopper was hopping about, chirping and singing to its heart's content. An ant passed by, bearing along with a great toil an ear of corn he was taking to the nest. "Why not come and chat with me," said the grasshopper, "instead of toiling and moiling in that way?" "I'm helping to lay up food for the winter," said the ant, "and recommend you to do the same." Excuse me. "Why bother about winter?" said the grasshopper. "We have plenty of food at present." But the ant went on his way and continued its toil. When the winter came, the grasshopper had no food and found itself dying of hunger. Well, it saw the ants distributing every day corn and grain from the stores they had collected in the summer. Then the grasshopper knew it's best to prepare for the days of necessity. You should know that story. It's actually one of Aesop's fables.
Yeah.
It's been around for a long time, and Aesop's fables, that wasn't written because they wanted you to learn about ants.
Right.
This was as appropriate then as it is now for what happens, and that's why, if you remember the ant and the grasshopper story, then think about the fact that if you think you are bugging out to somewhere else where you don't own land,
right,
where you don't have family there, where you haven't made your face known,
right,
and you're just going to show up there, I guarantee you they will never let you cross into the county. So either you make your plans now, if it ever did happen, and guess what? If nothing happens, I'm a pessimistic optimist. So an optimistic pessimist.
There you go.
I know poop happens.
Yes.
But I know that I can make it better than the worst it can be. So yeah. I'm happy if it's not complete cluster. If it's only partial cluster, I can live with it.
Yeah.
As long as I have my arms and legs, I'm still breathing, I'm still eating and all that, I'm good. Everything's going from there.
Yeah.
So I have it pretty broken down on there, some ideas and lots of things in the area on bugging out from there that you can go read.
Right.
So before we go on, the next topic I'm going to get into, it's kind of a break point, is talking about kits and gear. But before we go there, I just want to tell you that I want to, thank our sponsor who we have, who is MaxServe. MaxServe is based out of Belmar. If you have ever dealt with the Genius Bar, shoot me. I always get a good laugh. I have to say, though, if you want a good laugh, go in there and stand there and see, no offense to you, Eddie, but, you know,
right,
they put like a 20-year-old or whatever there, and he's standing under a sign with a neuron and a thing that says Genius Bar, and they all stand around like in a circle in a powwow when you present them with something they don't know.
Right, right.
Yeah. And they get, you can smell the hair burning while they're all talking.
Yeah.
This is the guy you want to go to. You can call my friend Sam over at MaxServe. Their number is 888-818-MACS. That's 888-818-MACS. Or you can hit him on email from info@maxserve.com. He started out in 1997. They do nothing but Apple products. If you have an iPhone and you can't get it to work, they're the ones to talk to.
Really?
If you have a Mac or you have an iPad that needs work or you're having something funky going on it, there's all kinds of new viruses and Trojans attacking them, call Sam and he'll take care of you. He handles businesses and private people. They're in Belmar. And once again, their number is 888-818-MACS. That's MaxServe. So as I choke on a swallow of water.
Yeah.
You're okay. You sound great.
See, this is what happens when you refuse to make recorded advertisements for your valued sponsors.
Yeah.
If they're nice enough to help keep this show on the air, I'm going to put my time in to give them a live spot every time.
There you go.
So let's talk about kits and gear. Once again, Those of you, if you just came in with us, if you go to the show site to practicepreparedness.com, click on the show notes and go to today's show. The show itself is not there yet archived for good reason, because we're not done yet. Yeah. It'll be about 2 hours after the show. But meanwhile, you can see all the buttons to the links on all my sites that I have set up for you to look at the things that coincide with the topic that I'm talking about. So if you go to Gear and Kits, you're going to find a whole plethora of things about repellents and things like bear bells and snake gaiters if you're going out in the woods, things like first aid kits and generators, camping gear, and all kinds of other things, along with weapons and tools. Take a gander, get yourself a little knowledge about what's going on with these things and get a handle on it. This is a quick way to kind of bring yourself up to speed. This one is pretty much a compendium on it. I teach several classes a year with it. By the way, if you're interested, I run several meetup.com groups in the South Jersey, Philadelphia area. I do a lot of guest classes, and I also do classes and teach for both businesses, private businesses, government people, and also for other meetup.com groups and churches and such. So if you have an organization and you're looking to get them a class to get them up to speed on things like situational awareness or prepping, feel free. There's a link on the front page you can hit there. If you want to send in a request for a show idea, or if you want to send in to us and tell us that you have a skill or an expertise level in an area in survivalism and preparedness and you'd like to be a guest, there's a link to that too. You can go over to that and you can enter into the form and send me an email, and I will get back to you after the show time or during the week, whenever you get to it. So let's talk about the real meat of the matter, and that's a survival kit. You'll see it's listed under my trademark name, which is Kits for Life, the kit culture. The idea here is that if you've watched things like Doomsday Preppers, you see some silly examples of how people build out things or make things that are completely not functional for real survival. Remember, real survival is every day. If you're prepared, there is no disaster. Even the biggest crisis that comes your way, you will have answers to. It gives you the most important thing, which is the mindset that goes with it, to know that you are prepared. It gives you confidence, a level of confidence. And as a result, you'll be able to be prepared to take on whatever that problem is. So I build out and make custom kits for people, especially EDCs. You'll see if you go to that section on Kits for Life, there are buttons down the right side that break down most of the major types of survival kits and such. By the way, I am not a bob or a bug out bag guy. I believe that if you're going to carry a bag that big, it better be an inch bag, which stands for I'm never coming home bag, because a bob is a 72-hour bag. I talked about this last week. You are never going to come across anything in a real disaster that's going to only impact you for 72 hours. So one of the things that you have to consider in your kits are to have food. And you, if you don't have food and a means or multiple means for fire and cooking, then you're not going to make it very far. We have a call, and what timing, Marco? Come on in, Marco. How you doing?
Good. How's it going? Well.
Alrighty. So I was just rolling into the kit side. Your timing is excellent. Marco is one of the members of my inner core group in our practice preparedness side. And he has a lot of really heavy skills in the area that he's been building. And one of his real things are that he's taken off on making up pre-made meals that are already measured. Everything's in them. All you have to do is add water. They're freeze-dried materials, so they're going to have a very long shelf life, and it really gives you a leg up because they weigh next to nothing. They fit into a pack, and you can carry lots of days and lots of calories of food. So tell them a little bit about doing the mini meals.
Mini meals are basically, for me, they're lentils and barley, which are all proteins and fibers, along with either chicken stock or beef stock, a dehydrate or a freeze-dried chicken or beef, along with dehydrated vegetables. Add 6 cups of water, and you basically can make a stew or a soup that will feed several people, and they weigh about 8 ounces.
There you go, and they're pretty tasty because we've done it. I'm going to do another class coming up on the weekend off of the advanced class, the practice preparedness class. And what we're going to do is we're going to go out in the field again and cook out in the field like we did last time. We had a really good time with that last time, didn't we, Marco?
Sure did. Keep fun. Everybody shared knowledge.
Yep, and that's the whole idea. Nobody knows everything, not me, not you, not anybody, but by being able to put together a group of people who you can trust, that you can work with, that you can have respect for, mutual respect for, allows a great sharing of knowledge and information that allows everyone to grow, whether it's together or in their own teams and their own family, who can then all come together and not be an anchor, but work together. So you've been following what's happening. You get a lot of my sit reps from me. Have you seen anything else in your back end about what they are talking about in the upcoming few days, of any threats or anything we need to know about?
I've not heard anything. I'm waiting for confirmation on several things. I have not heard anything new. My point of concern recently was we had tornadoes and twisters down in Mississippi on Christmas, and are getting followed up with living in destroyed homes with a cold front below zero coming in behind it. What do you do in that situation?
Well, there you go. And that's why I wanted to cover this topic, and you had actually suggested this topic for this week. So there you go. And by the way, you had texted me during the show that the numbers to call in weren't there. They are on the front page. Scroll down just a little below the part that says programming note for the change time, for those who hadn't caught on to it yet. There's all three numbers. For those of you who do try to call in, remember, unfortunately, these are not rollover numbers. So if there's someone on, you're going to beep on the air in the background, do call waiting, right, and you're not going to get through. It'll end up cutting you off. I think we figured it out around three rings.
Yep.
So call back on one of the other numbers. Don't let it beep. Be courteous, and we'll get you on if we can fit you in. The other thing is there are a couple of new buttons on the front page, too, a little lower. One is to text me during the show. And then, of course, like I said, one for suggesting a topic for a future show, and one to be a guest on this show. So Marco, one of the other things that you do is you do a lot of firearm stuff. Have you seen anything new in there that we need to talk about? I'm going to be bringing on someone from the NRA in a few weeks if everything works out. What's going on in that world with you guys?
Nothing much, really. I heard possibly there's going to be another buyback shortly program from the state.
I don't know if you saw, but the NRA had come out with one of their rating sets recently on politicians, and they gave a 5-star rating to Christie because apparently he's even done more to support gun rights in New Jersey than I even knew about. And he just had a commission end a couple weeks ago and give their report. And it was a bipartisan commission to look at what they could do to clean up the laws in New Jersey's gun laws. And one of them that they talked about was actually easing and making it more realistic to honestly offer carry licenses to people, because they even in the report said that basically it was a joke that though they said they would give one, that they don't give them out at all. And that the criteria to find out who should be allowed to have one was so stringent and so ambiguous that they could basically deny everyone.
Well, they do give them out, but only if you're on duty for an armored car company or a position where you actually need to carry it. But that's the only time you're allowed to carry it.
Right, and one of the things that they brought up in that report was about the real conundrum with the way it's written for a direct path between work and home and any reasonable interruption in between. which I thought was really interesting because it is. I mean, there have been a lot of cases recently where people have been clipped where it's clearly not had anything of a negative intent, but has been basically, you know, the people just simply being human, stopping to go to the bathroom, whatever, that was deemed as undue deviation from the path from work to home. So there's some interesting things coming out of it. You have anything else you want to throw in on it?
Just keep your generators prepared. We are coming into the bad weather season. You know, have your fuel stocked up with stable in it in your shed, so this way it's away from your home. You know, keep the combustion away from where you're going to be able to stay.
Okay, yeah. And that's why I had brought up, I have a link on the page to go to the equipment page so that they can see there's a whole section just on that, on how to do it. And if you use your generator, please, please go today and purchase a carbon monoxide detector to put in the house, at least on the first floor, because it would be the first one to get it. It's really important, because if you don't do that, you may not live long enough to enjoy the value of having run your generator. Every year, people die from carbon monoxide because they start up a generator during the winter season, during the hurricane season, and put it too close to their house. And the winds, the prevailing winds, push the there's no odor to carbon monoxide. So if the generator is running properly, you're going to get it in the house. You won't even know, and you just won't wake up. Please, please read about that. I have a whole section about that in there off of the button on the practice preparedness for today's show. It'll take you right there on gear and equipment. So, all right, Marco, I appreciate you calling in. I'm going to jump into a couple of the other subjects real quick before we burn out of the time.
Okay, sir. Talk to you later.
All righty. Take care now. So for those of you who are interested, by the way, as I said on the top of the page, on every page in practicepreparedness.com, there is a button to go join the meetup groups if you're in the local area in the Philadelphia, South Jersey area. We have people who come in from Delaware, Virginia, and New York all the time. It's a bit of a haul, but I think we put on enough of information that it makes it worth a trip. You can join us, and I have not actually posted it yet, which is bad me. But we're going to have a class, a beginner class on survival first aid that we're going to have on the 4th. So that will be on the South Jersey survival skills side. So if you're not signed up and you're interested in coming, there's still time. It's down in Williamstown in New Jersey. So it's a pretty easy shot off of the Route 42 or off of the Atlantic City Expressway. It's the second exit coming from Philadelphia. It's not too far. Go check that out. So back into some of the other things. Generator tips. I have a button for that on here. Go there. Self-explanatory. I cover safety, capacity, so how to rate the generator for what you need. Remember, you don't need 3 TVs on, all the lights, and all kinds of other things. You need basics to survive. You don't want to burn your way through all of your spare fuel. Getting fuel now. Get some empty containers. They're not cheap. But boy, let me tell you, last year when the bad weather came, trying to find 5-gallon gas containers then, they went from in the $20 range to up into the $50 range.
Really?
And they were killing each other over them.
Wow.
Home Depot was bringing them up on pallets from as far south as North and South Carolina to here when we had the problems last year.
Yeah.
And they could not keep them.
Wow.
If you don't have... Excuse me. If you don't have snow scrapers, ice scrapers for your windshield, get them. If you do not have things like, a chain, a heavy-duty bike chain to lock it down, then you need to lock it down. If you don't have one, the best chain that you can get is a New York City bicycle chain. They have squared. They have squared links. And, And they are nearly impregnable. So you want to get one, a cheap version of it. You can get as low as like $15 sometimes on sale at Harbor Freight. Go check them out. We have another caller. Hello?
Hello?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Alrighty. And this is one of my favorite people, Prodigy. This is Jessie. She is an over-the-road trucker. She's going to become one of our regulars on this show. We're going to actually put together. What is your Facebook page right now?
My Facebook page right now, the group page is Road Fox Trucking, LLC. Road Fox, like the animal.
Okay, so looks like we're getting another call in the background. They're going to beep on us with caller waiting. If you're listening, we're already in. We're probably not going to have time for another call. But if you want, try one of the other two numbers listed on this site because you're not going to get through. So what do you have for us today, Lady Trucker? What's good in survival for crisis on your side today?
Well, I was just listening to your show, and the gentleman that just left, he mentioned, you know, the carbon monoxide, you know, the machine to detect it. And that's actually something that we brought up in the trucks as well, because we idle a lot and we have a generator attached to our trucks. And so one of the things that we brought up in a safety meeting recently for my company was to keep one of those carbon monoxide detectors on our truck as well, because we use a lot of equipment that would release that into the air. So
sure.
And the whole situation about the storms and everything, keeping your fuel tank full, because Thor last year, that hurricane that came through with that really big storm that came through Thor, mm-hmm. where there were people stuck on 65 in Tennessee yep. for days, and they ran out of fuel, they ran out of food. It's a really big thing, you know, making sure your fuel tanks are at least halfway full in the wintertime at any time to never have it go below halfway.
That's certainly a good point. I made that point last week, too, and it's something that needs to be repeated over and over. Plus, the more empty your tank is when you have the temperature changes, you're more likely to get condensation in the top of the tank, which will then slosh down into fuel, so you get water in your fuel. So that's a big deal, too. And another thing you touched on there, which is really important, which is why you need to have a backpack or some kind of a kit, whether it's a tub in your back of your car or your truck, whatever, that has foodstuffs that have high protein, that have some sugars, some fats in them, like things like jerky and protein bars and whatnot, that'll give you a broad spectrum of foods to at least keep you up. If you're not allergic to peanuts, I always recommend peanut butter. It's a good quick hit. And bottles of water, large amounts of water. I even prefer one of those 5-gallon, because then it's BPA free. Unlike the little bottles of water, you're not going to have to worry whatever the temperature. These are things you need in your vehicle. Even if it froze, you still have it at hand. It's potable water that you can warm up and use. Another thing is, I know, Jessie, you've heard me talk about it before, Sterno containers. If you put one of them on the floor mm-hmm. in your vehicle on something so that it doesn't get hot and you light it, it is amazing how even with the windows slightly cracked, it will warm up the interior of your vehicle so you don't have to sit and idle and burn all your fuel out.
Absolutely. And being a truck driver, we have diesel, which gels, so they're also very useful for getting rid of the gelling inside of your tank if you do end up having to sit and not able to put any anti-gel in there.
Mm-hmm. So, and that goes to other things like having the ability to cook. So the problem is, like, for you as a trucker, you have all these limitations. We were talking about it the other day, where they don't want you to have a 5-gallon bucket with kitty litter because they think you're going to discard refuse on the side of the road, excrement or whatever. And there's other weird things, like they restrict you having cooking fuels and whatnot. But there are still options that you can have that you can use in order to be able to cook and heat. Last class, we had someone bring in one of those new deals that are using those heat packs where you crack it open, you pour water in it, and then it turns hot and it'll actually cook the food in the container that it goes with. There are other yeah. options if you're in that position, but most people can have a Coleman stove in their trunk, even if it's a single burner and so forth.
Exactly. And one of the classes that you taught, where you taught us how to make that little stove burner out of the rubbing alcohol, mm-hmm. that would be great to kind of mention as well, because if most people have an alcohol in their car, something that's a medical kit, a lot of people have the little medical cases, And that alcohol can save your life. Just that tiny little strip that you get from those prep pads, that can save your life in a situation like that.
Yeah.
You know, being able to heat up some kind of food to keep yourself warm or even have some kind of heat in general.
Absolutely. And those are key pieces. People don't think about it. You know, that situation that happened in Atlanta when all those people walked away, left their cars in the middle of the highway and just walked off of I-75 a couple years ago, and 10,000 people were roaming the street, which brings another thing on. If you don't and you can afford it, go get a zero-degree sleeping bag. You can slip yourself inside of it and stay warm and toasty, not get hypothermia while you're waiting for help if you're in a safe location. If not, you can use it for cover. And the other thing is, you should always, I always keep a heavy coat and a rain gear set in my vehicle all the time, because sometimes it'll be like on Christmas, you walked out, it was 70 something degrees. You're like, oh, I don't need anything. And then you go to leave at night at 10 o'clock at night and suddenly it's raining outside and dropped into the 40s. It's a big deal. Imagine if you broke down on the side of the road and you were in a situation where you needed to be able to be safe and warm. You don't want to be sick or worse from that. So having Absolutely. Those things with you is critical.
And another thing to mention, Will, as well, going off waterproof clothing, being a flatbed truck driver, I've bought a lot of waterproof materials or a lot of rain jackets that were heavy duty, not those cheap plastic ones, and realizing after it starts raining and it's cold outside that it's not 100% waterproof, that silicone spray will save your life in a lot of situations, especially with boots. You can spray your boots, you can spray your coat, you can spray anything to help it become more waterproof. But your sleeping bags, your tent, you know, just a $3 can, $5 can, that'll save you a lot of hassle as well.
Absolutely, and that's a really great, some really great input. And I really appreciate you calling in, because those are some really hard points. And we are going to be having you on for the Jesse moment every few weeks. And we'll be pulling you in while you're out on the road, because you encounter things most people don't think about. They are completely and directly related to real things in the real world, surviving every day, that will help people who want to be prepared for any survival means and reason, and helps because these are practiced activities.
Exactly. And before I go, I just want to mention, because we are talking about weather and having to stop and survive in place, if you do have to stop, try and stop on an on-ramp, because the off-ramp people are still going fast. If you have to pull over on the side of the road, try to avoid the shoulder at all points, because if it's bad weather and a car like loses control or anything, you're going to be a sitting duck. And that's something that we kind of drill into our drivers as well, is, you know, if you have to stop somewhere, don't risk your life, don't risk other people's lives. Pull your car over to the off-ramp or the on-ramp. On-ramp preferably, because people aren't driving fast and trying to go all crazy.
That's a really good point. Well, I thank you for calling, and I got a couple last points to hit before we get off. So we'll talk to you again later. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Will.
Alrighty, so a couple quick points that she just reminded me of that I hadn't touched on yet. You've seen a lot of tornadoes going on out west and in the Midwest. Never, ever, ever get underneath of an overpass. This is not a safe haven. If you get under an overpass and a tornado hits by, it will cause, there's a thing called the Venturi effect. It actually speeds the winds underneath of the overpass. It will heighten the likelihood that you will die. Do not go underneath of an overpass. If you were in an area, you were in a highway, and it's coming at you, park your car, get away from your vehicle so it doesn't flip it on you, lay face down in the ditch on the side of the road, and stay there until it passes by. It may be dirty, but it beats the heck out of the alternative. If you saw those pictures of the people who were plowed over and the cars were rolled over into each other and killed the other day, it's a horrible thing. These are really important things. Waterproofing, all these things are critical. So when you go out, and if you're going out for New Year's, remember, have gear in the car. You're not home. If something goes wrong, even if it's a weather event, you will have it at reach that you can get to, so you can help yourself and others. Do not go unprepared. Always prepared or never prepared. That is the rule. And remember, there is no disaster when you're prepared. So I will leave you with that idea, and I will remind you of our friends over at the Meadows Diner in Blackwood. It's Gloucester Township, New Jersey, right off of Blackwood Clement Road on Black Horse Pike. It's 101 South Black Horse Pike. Go see them. They're a great family diner, local diner. We highly recommend them. Tell Nick that Will sent you, and they'll take good care of you. They always take care of you anyway, but let them know that you came. And that's basically our show for the day. So until next week, stay safe. Be aware, practice situational awareness, and we'll see you back next week. Hit the website, practicepreparedness.com. We're out of here.